Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter. Purdue lost in heartbreaking fashion Saturday night in the Elite Eight, seeing its NCAA tournament run come to an end. But what a run it was. I'm Kyle Charters, Brian Newbert here for Gold and Black Radio. We'll bring in Tom Dienhart to fill us in on spring football with the game coming up on Saturday as well. We'll do that here in a couple of minutes, but let's start with basketball. The Boilermakers making a run to the Elite Eight, but coming up short in the final seconds of regulation, and then losing to Virginia in Louisville on Saturday night in overtime. Brian, I think if you play those last 12 seconds out 10 times, Purdue might come away with a victory 8 or 9 times in that scenario. Unfortunately for the Boilermakers, it falls the other way to the Cavaliers on Saturday night in that particular instance. A couple of things had to go right. A couple of things had to go wrong for Purdue. Need a free throw, need an offensive rebound. If you do probably either one of those things in the last couple of seconds, maybe it's the Boilermakers playing in the Final Four this coming weekend.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't necessarily know if Purdue melted down or screwed up those last couple seconds. Obviously the free throw was big, but you're going to miss free throws. That's part of basketball. I thought Virginia made a hell of a play to just get that hand on that offensive rebound to somehow tip the ball out that far, and then the freshman, Kihei Clark, made an all-time great play to do what he did, and they made a tough shot at the buzzer, and that was a great play Virginia made. You know, I don't necessarily think that was Purdue losing the game as much as it was Virginia winning the game. Obviously, you always want to protect the glass on a missed free throw, but stuff happens sometimes, and that's kind of the way it goes sometimes. But I think you probably have to give Virginia more credit than you kind of look at it like Purdue screwing up the end of the game. You know, the Tennessee game could be gone either way as well. So I don't think Tennessee would be sitting here necessarily thinking they screwed that game up, as opposed to Purdue just won the game. And I think the opposite is true for the Virginia-Purdue game. I think Virginia won that game in those last couple of seconds more than Purdue lost it.
Yeah. I agree with you. You know, Purdue got some of the breaks and made some of the plays at the end of the Tennessee game to come away with a victory there against them, against Virginia. Just unfortunate. I agree with you on the free throws. I mean, I think you know, some fortunate Klein misses there, but you're going to miss some free throws. It's the offensive boards and the offensive boards in the second half that really cost Purdue the opportunity and made it come down to that. You know, Purdue made the adjustment. Matt Painter did by putting two big guys in there. That's sort of in a game that you felt like both teams were going to make a run, and it was sort of who was in control of it in the last 2 minutes. Thought Purdue, you know, made that last move to put themselves in a position to be the team that was making the surge sort of at the right moment. It was a really good game and a really well-coached game, I think, by both those guys, Matt Painter and Tony Bennett. It just was a matter of who made the plays late. And as it turned out, it was Virginia who was able to do that.
Right, right. That was a play at the end that probably is made one out of every 75 times. You know, that's sort of what it came down to, and that was the margin for error, you know, in a game that was played very well on both sides. As you said, coached very well on both sides, obviously had some all-time great performances on both sides between Kyle Guy's second half shooting and obviously Carson Edwards with an all-time classic performance in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, it was fitting. It came down to such a memorable play because it was a really memorable game. It's just unfortunate for Purdue that it was on the wrong end of it. But obviously doesn't take anything away or from the kind of remarkable nature of the season. I think it would have been extraordinary for Purdue to go to the Final Four, but I think this was still a pretty remarkable season for Purdue to even be in that situation in the first place. And I think they handled themselves well in a game where they certainly weren't the favorite and were certainly good enough to beat one of the best teams in college basketball on the biggest stage in college basketball.
Would you do anything different down the stretch? My only thought is maybe Travion Williams in on the free throw. I mean, I think that's being a little bit nitpicky. But I'm just not sure that you could have played it much differently than what Purdue did. Aside from just getting the rebound.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to go back and watch it. I kind of would wonder about Travion Williams there. I don't think it really matters about the fact that he's struggling from the free throw line in that situation because there's so little time left and the rebound is the single most important thing of the game, part of the game at that point. He would have occupied more space, I think, than Grady Eifert would have. I was surprised Grady Eifert didn't play more. I know this wasn't his best game, but I think, you know, 30-some games and a penchant all season long for getting the loose balls that Purdue wasn't getting in this game in the second half, you know, I don't know. But in terms of what you would do differently in that situation, you can't second guess the foul because look at what had to happen to make the foul the wrong decision. You know, they are much more likely to make a three-pointer to tie the game than to miss the second half of a free throw unintentionally, by the way, it seemed like, tip the ball out to half court, have a freshman make the play he made, and then to have a guy who's your fifth leading scorer or whatever it is make an impossible shot over a 7'3" guy getting the ball out of his hands as fast as possible. The percentages in that situation of that happening, as I said before, that's a play that's probably made one out of every 75 times. You can't say that Purdue made the wrong call by fouling. Purdue absolutely made the right call by fouling. That is a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. You can look at it either way, depending on what worked or what didn't work. But what had to happen for fouling up three to blow up in Purdue's face was just an extraordinary set of circumstances. So in terms of things you'd do differently down the stretch, I would certainly not count that as one of them.
Yeah. All right, you've watched a lot of NCAA basketball over the years. Where's Carson Edwards' performance in that game rank for you?
I can't really think of any others that come to mind in that sort of class. I'm sure there have been tons, but obviously it's something that's going to be remembered at Purdue for a long, long time, something that's going to be remembered in NCAA history for a long, long time. Just an extraordinary level of play from him. And look who he did it against. He did it against the national champion, the defending national champion. He did it against the 2 seed and he did it against a 1 seed. This wasn't the bracket completely clearing out for Purdue and Purdue getting a bunch of stiffs. This was, you know, a pretty formidable group of teams that he did this against. And he was just dominant. And between his games against Villanova and Virginia and Ryan Klein's game against Tennessee, Purdue obviously made this a pretty memorable NCAA tournament. They were the talk of college basketball for a couple days there while in Louisville. And that was a pretty cool thing for the program for sure. It's just unfortunate they couldn't quite get to that Final Four, being right on the cusp of it.
I mean, what does it mean for Purdue now going forward? You'd like to be able to get that Final Four and sort of be on that stage and then have that marker as a program that you've been able to get there. Certainly they took another step forward this year by being on the cusp of that and being on that, you know, stage and taking a good team to the limit like it did. And, you know, Carson Edwards and Ryan Klein and all that happened here. So what does it mean going forward?
I think it probably redefined possible. I don't know if Purdue fans are ever going to go into an NCAA tournament game, are ever going to go into an NCAA tournament again, thinking our team can only do this much because of what this team just did. And I should probably extend that out to Purdue fans may never go into a season again thinking this team is only capable of so much because this team in general was only supposed to be capable of so much and exceeded it by 100-fold. And, I don't think anybody ever in a million years would have said this was the team that was almost going to get Purdue to the Final Four, and it did. And I think from here on out, anytime Purdue gets in the NCAA tournament now, people have to look at Purdue as, you know, anything is possible here, and that is something that could change the way people look at Purdue basketball forever. I just think this is a season that the impact of which can be felt here for quite a while. In part, too, because you had a lot of really important guys for your future who were part of this. A really good group of young players who played pretty good basketball when it mattered the most, but also were around winning. And Purdue had a lot of young players on this team, and this is going to be their team for the next couple of years in large part. And kind of keeping that expectation, that standard of success going, seeing what it took to win this year, I think could really matter for Purdue here the next couple of years. You always want that kind of expectation of winning, however you want to term it, to be carried on from class to class. And when things went sideways on Purdue many years ago, now for those two back-to-back years, that kind of went by the wayside. But I think winning this year when Purdue wasn't necessarily supposed to win at the level it won at, I think was really, really important from a continuity of success perspective. And I just think the impact of this season in a lot of different ways can be felt here for 4 years around this program.
Yeah. All right, let's turn our attention here briefly to football recruiting, because Purdue did get a football recruit last week. I think it came after Monday, so didn't get an opportunity to talk about it last week. And Gus Hartwig,
Wednesday
the center. right in the middle of prep, right, for the Tennessee game.
Good timing.
Great convenient timing. I think it was Carissa McLaughlin who committed to Purdue on Thanksgiving a few years ago, so that was nice of her.
They committed on Christmas.
They never asked.
A couple years ago.
Who was it?
Correct. I don't remember who it was. Somebody committed on Christmas. It was a few years ago. I think it was one of the Hazel years. But anyway.
Yeah, always convenient timing. Nobody's looking out for the reporter, certainly. So Gus Hartwig commits on Wednesday. The center from Zionsville, offensive lineman. I mean, that's going to be a position of great need for this class. And it looks like Hartwig, at least, you know, watching a little bit on video and, you know, looking at the measurables, a pretty good pickup for the Boilermakers.
Yeah, if he's going to play center, I don't know if that's necessarily etched in stone quite yet. I think, you know, he was recruited as an interior lineman who could probably go either way. You know, Purdue has Spencer Halstead playing center right now among its true freshmen. So you always want a young guy in that position too. So I guess we'll see how perhaps they feel about him. That might give them the flexibility to play Hartwig at guard. But this was one of their top offensive line targets. This was a guy that if you categorized early targets, A, B, C list, you know, so to speak, this would have been an A list sort of guy. And that's what I always say about early commitments is the best reason to think they're good is because this is a player that your coaching staff absolutely positively wants, because obviously these staffs have to triage this time of year in terms of the guys they want and the guys they want, and the guys they want enough to take early. And this was obviously a guy that they would have taken whenever, and a really significant get for Purdue in that sense. This is going to be a really important offensive line class. And Purdue is taking the tack with offensive linemen in this class that, hey, we just signed a hell of a good wide receiver class. We feel like we're going to have good running backs in the program. We're always going to have good quarterbacks. The offensive line is the next piece of the puzzle. Purdue's talking about how it has a really good talent level coming in on defense. The last piece of the puzzle here, and I shouldn't say the last piece, but the next piece of the puzzle for Purdue is really bringing its offensive line recruiting up to that same level. And that message happens to line up with a year where there's a bunch of really good offensive linemen, not only in Indiana, but in Purdue's general recruiting footprint here. And if Purdue can get a really good offensive line class in this class, that would really, really bring Purdue's overall recruiting up to an even higher level. And Gus Hartwig is certainly a good start because, as I said before, he was one of those absolute positively A-list sort of guys.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Brian.
No problem.
Be sure to check out much more on goldandblack.com as Brian starts to look forward to what's next for Purdue basketball. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some of the other news from Saturday. Sort of got lost in the wash there a little bit, the injury to quarterback Elijah Sindelar. We'll talk to Tom Dienhardt about that. That coming up in just a moment on Golden Black Radio. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chop salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. The warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event at the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
The Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus is your experienced real estate group in Greater Lafayette. If you're looking to buy, sell, upsize, downsize, or anything else, give me a call or text at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics.
And Kyle here with Tom to talk a little bit of spring football. Spring game is on Saturday, and the Boilermakers will play that game, Tom, without Elijah Sindelar, the quarterback who tweaked the surgically repaired knee earlier in the week, did not participate in the scrimmage over the weekend. This was some news that at least to some, maybe not those who are on our website, goldenblack.com, a lot, but maybe some others out there got a little bit lost in the wash on Saturday with the big basketball game, but some pretty big news. Sindelar out for the rest of the spring.
Yeah, Kyle, the true Purdue football cognoscente are always dialed in right to the website. So they knew, they saw the news that broke on Saturday post-scrimmage. Jeff Brohm speaking to the media. I asked him, you know, why wasn't number two out there taking part in the scrimmage today? And that's when he said Elijah had, quote, tweaked his knee, hyperextension, and Kyle, it's the same knee, the left knee, that Sindelar tore the ACL in back in 2017. Elijah didn't practice on Tuesday last week either, Kyle. Again, I asked the Purdue media folks why he wasn't out there. I got no response, and again, he wasn't out there Saturday. Got a response, and it's not a good one for Purdue.
So what level of concern should we all be here?
How about DEFCON 1, to give you a little War Games reference? You know, we all know the importance of Sindelar, a fifth-year senior, 9 career starts, was Purdue's starting quarterback coming into each of the last 2 years. I mean, we all know his resume. We all know his skill level and his experience level. Beyond him, Kyle, you know, just a score of inexperienced quarterbacks, talented but inexperienced. But sophomore Nick Sipe, the presumed number two, Kyle, has been out almost all spring with a bad back. So redshirt freshman Jack Plummer's really been the number two for all intents and purposes, was the number one on Saturday. So Purdue's got to get these guys ready. I asked Brohm Sadler, hey, would you be comfortable if you had to run Jack Plummer out there right now to start a game? And Brohm didn't flinch and said he was comfortable. Kyle, in fact, he said he'd be comfortable running sophomore walk on Aiden O'Connell out there too to start.
I mean, yeah, Aiden O'Connell actually looks pretty good. And, I mean, you got to couch that a little bit with he's the walk-on. He's really the fourth stringer probably if everybody's healthy. But it is pretty impressive what he's able to do out there and how he looks in practice. However, that said, when we go out there and watch, Tom, there is a distinct difference with how Elijah spins the ball and what Purdue's offense is and anyone else, right? So, I mean, it's a pretty big deal headed into this summer and then into the fall.
Yeah, if you subtract Sinlar from that offense, then who knows? Who knows what happens? I mean, you hate to even go there if you're a Purdue fan. Probably wouldn't be a total disaster, but certainly this offense, you think of the potential of it, Kyle. Sinlar, Rondale Moore, Bryson Hopkins, the incoming freshman led by David Bell at wide receiver, a pretty productive group of running backs led by Tario Fuller. Looks pretty good, right? Subtract Sinlar, and then everything sort of gets thrown up in the air. And, you know, another X factor is the offensive line. Probably the biggest question offensively coming in the spring, no real answers yet on the interior. Two new guards and a new center. The guy they want to be the starting center, Victor Beach, has missed most of the spring with a bad back. The good news, though, Beach took part in the scrimmage Saturday. Rom thinks he can finish this spring strong. They really want him to be the guy. But, again, this offensive line has to come together to protect Sinlar and that cranky left knee of his.
So is Purdue healthy enough on Saturday to divide its roster into two and play a game, or is there any thought that it might be more of a scrimmage situation? We've seen, you know, Purdue do that in the past. I don't know that they've done it with Jeff Brohm, but they have done that in the past. Other teams have had to when they've had some injury situations. Any thoughts on that?
You know, we haven't heard officially or asked any of the staff about that just yet. My guess would be maybe leaning more toward a scrimmage when you consider the injuries, especially, Kyle, on defense, the front seven. I mean, it seems like more key guys are out than are in on defense. You know, Cornell Jones, Marcus Bailey, Jalen Alexander, Lorenzo Neal, Willie Lane's hurt now as well, Brennan Thieneman. You can go on and on. I mean, the defense has been a mash in it. And now we have the Sinlar injury. They don't want to take any big chances again with Beach, but he'll probably be out there. So I'd have to think that there's going to be a little bit of caution. Brohm has been very physical this spring, a lot of tackling. It's going to be interesting to see. But, again, if I were to make a guess, I'd say maybe this thing morphs into a scrimmage. And, hey, it's going to be a good day out there weather-wise. I heard it's going to be 65 and sunny, so at least the conditions will be ideal for the team and fans.
Pretty clear what the number one goal is after Saturday, right? Get healthy. I mean, that's it, right?
Get healthy, yeah. And, you know, Brohm isn't really worried about guys like Lorenzo Neal, obviously, and Marcus Bailey, the veterans who played. He's more concerned with, you know, the guys like a Victor Beach in particular, younger guys who haven't played much, who haven't been on the field this spring. So, again, he's not really sweating bullets over veterans. He just wants to get everybody healthy into the fall at this point. So they're not going to do anything crazy. They're smart. But we'll get a chance to see this team one last time on Saturday, how they practice today and Wednesday, and then again April 6th, this Saturday, the final look at the team before the big run-up to fall camp, and then, of course, that game at Nevada, I think, went on August 30th here on a Friday night.
So we got about a minute here. Last year we saw Alexander Horvath, have a big spring, turn that into being a contributor then in the fall. Who do you feel like has had a big spring here who will turn that into playing time now for the Boilermakers once the season starts?
I think we got our first look at him Saturday. Ahmad Anderson Jr., the redshirt freshman. Staten Island, New York. He's a slight guy, Kyle, about 5'11", 175. But he's made plays all spring. And, boy, he looked good on Saturday as well. And all these wide receivers have a big sense of urgency. You know, their position coach, you know, Jamarcus Shepard, he's not shy about being vocal. And he's been in these guys' ear all winter, all spring, about, hey, you better get dialed in because we got four receivers coming in. Again, they didn't come here to sit on the bench. So he stepped up his game, and an older guy, Jared Sparks, I think he stepped his game up as well. So those are a couple guys who will look to continue that on Saturday. And, hey, don't count out Jackson Anthrop, you know. Number 33, all he does is he makes plays too. He's a dependable option as well.
Thanks, Tom. Sounds good.
Take care, Kyle, buddy.
All right, let's take a break. Let's come back with just a bit more on the podcast here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Bronze Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights, and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
A lot to digest after the weekend. More on goldandblack.com, the aftermath of Purdue's loss in the Elite Eight, plus much more leading into the spring game on Saturday. All right, that'll do it for our show for this week. Thanks to our sponsors, as always, East End Grill, First Source Bank, Charter's Team at Remax Ability Plus, Follett's, the 6th Street Dive, and Purdue Federal Credit Union. We'll be back with more next Monday for this podcast. Of course, look for more as it drops as well throughout the week as news breaks. For Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.